Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Welcome to episode 134 of the podcast, everybody, with Dan Prosser and Andrew Frankel, where we're tackling what I think is an important topic for many of our listeners, maybe all of our listeners. We're all talking about affordable fun cars, and in particular, the future of the affordable fun car.
Is there going to be one?
Is there one? Well, that's right, yeah. Does it look bleak? Is there anything to feel encouraged by? But before we do that, I just want to put one thing to you. What do we mean by affordable? Because everybody on this planet has a different definition of what that word means. So I think we should just set it out right at the top.
Well, okay, so what does it mean? I think it needs to be a car. Well, I mean, I think it starts at zero, it starts at nothing, and it ends with a new price of, I mean, certainly less than 40, probably less than £30,000. The only reason I'm pausing at all is I'm just wondering whether the GR86
is exactly.
And I know you can't buy a GR86, but we're not going to disappear down that rabbit hole. Because we are going to be talking about the GR86, and we know that it's, for some people, find it immensely frustrating, which I completely understand because they really, really wanted one. And the entire UK allocation of whatever it was, 800 cars, sold out in 3 seconds flat. But what is the list price of that car? Is it £29,995 or something?
I think it's about 30, isn't it? Yeah, and I think probably so, once you've ticked a couple of boxes, it's into the 30s.
Okay. GR86 downwards then. But I think you are right. People do have their own ideas of what it is, but I think we all know an affordable car when we see one. And there's not going to be anything on here, I hope, that most people listening to this will think, affordable, you've got to be joking.
Because people will remember when you could get an MX-5 for 17 grand or something. Those days are long, long, long gone. And so anything under 35 nowadays, for a new car, particularly a performance-oriented car, anything under 35 has got to be affordable. It's got to count as affordable.
Is there a difference between affordable and cheap?
Yes. We're really getting into it now. It doesn't matter. We're not going to talk about anything over 35-ish, okay? So now we know.
I'm going to be talking about a lot that's nowhere near even that mark.
So where are we today with affordable fun cars? You know, 20,000, 30,000, whatever. I do remember a time not too long ago when there were lots of little purpose-built sports cars, lots of little coupes on the market, and we could do group tests with them. We could gather a whole bunch of them together, go away, and do a really lovely group test with a handful of intriguing and genuinely fun, affordable cars. Nowadays, you'd struggle to pull together a group, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. And the thing is, it's not going to get any better. And I don't want to come over. I mean, I think we tend to, well, I certainly hope we tend to strike quite a positive note on this podcast. I don't want to come across all doom and gloom, but everything I look at, and actually, It applies whether you're talking about new cars or second-hand cars. It applies to different reasons. But I just think that those sorts of cars, they're either not going to be made or they're going to become so expensive that we can no longer categorise them as affordable anymore. So I think that they are, you know, I think they are a seriously endangered species. And for all sorts of reasons. And of course, there are different categories of affordable sports cars. I mean, there's GR86s, there's MX5, but there's also, and I don't suppose this is the last time this word is going to come into this conversation, you know, Fiesta STs.
Yeah.
You know, cars which, you know, aren't just recreations, cars which you would happily use, you know, every day of your working life. So I have to say, I don't think it's looking great, because there are so many challenges, aren't there? There are challenges because, as we know, we're all moving towards an EV future, rightly or wrongly. There are challenges because there's an ever-increasing amount of mandatory stuff which you have to have on cars these days, all of which makes cars bigger, all of which makes cars more expensive. There is the cost of money at the moment, which is only going to get even more expensive. There is the rise of in value of second-hand cars, which just makes, you know, even that market ever more challenging. I just think that, you know, and also from a manufacturer's point of view, you know, a small sports car, certainly, or even actually a hatchback these days, but certainly a sports car is kind of like the worst of all worlds. If you think what the best of all worlds is for a car manufacturer, it's something like a Porsche Cayenne, because you can sell them enormous quantities of them, and you can make a massive amount of money on both of them. So you get volume and you get margin. A small sports car is the opposite of that. You don't sell very many, and you don't make much out of any of them. So if you are a cash-strapped car manufacturer, and you have this enormous problem of having to finance all those new platforms you're going to have to make to preserve your EV future, what are you going to give up? What's going to go first? Are you going to give up on the stuff that's, you know, that has sort of kept you going all the way through, or are you going to give up the sort of the icing on the cake, the thing which you quite like because it's quite good for your brand, it makes people feel warm about it, but actually you make bugger all money out of, and that's going to be it.
Yeah, these cars, these particularly purpose built sports cars, they come along in the good times, don't they, when things are all rosy, because the manufacturers can afford to do them. But when things are tough, and things have perhaps never been tougher, with the environmental pressures, with very real production and supply problems, with, more than anything, this switch to EV, which is happening very quickly, and manufacturers are going to find it difficult to do that at scale and profitably. So there's all these pressures piling on. And so making a case for actually quite a frivolous kind of car that doesn't drive profit is very, very difficult. And it's one reason why we're seeing platform sharing of sports cars, Supra and Z4, MX5 and 124, because it that sort of thing does make the business case for this sort of car. Yeah, it makes it possible.
I mean, both BMW and Toyota told me that if they'd not been able to platform share, those cars would not have been created. They simply wouldn't have done that. Okay, then, I mean, they're not in the affordable bracket, but it is, you know, even at that level where you'd hope you make some margin out of them, those cars are only possible if you go into a JV with someone.
Yeah, GR86 and BRZ, same thing, isn't it? And so that does explain why the affordable sports car market looks a bit thinner than it has done in the past. Although we do have, and you've touched on it, a good number of affordable and brilliant little hot hatches out there. You know, there are minis, there's the Fiesta ST for now, there's the i20N, other bits and pieces. So maybe that is where the affordable fun is at the moment.
How long are they going to last?
How long are they going to... Well, the Fiesta, a few months.
You think of the world that those cars were invented in, you think of the world that they've come into. It's not the same place, is it? It really isn't the same place. And, you know, I really hope I'm wrong, and I'm not some kind of, you know, soothsayer who can see the future and pretends to know any of it, let alone all of it. But I just think it's going to be difficult. And unless, you know, a car manufacturer, and I can actually see, you know, a manufacturer like Hyundai, which, you know, has started to make giant strides and in its mainstream offerings is absolutely comparable with the best that Europe can do. But they still have this thing with the brand is not quite as strong, and people don't covet a Hyundai in the same way they might covet a Volkswagen. I can still see them taking a strategic decision that cars like the i20N are really good at that, so they still need to make cars like that. But yeah, so there is, as I say, a strategic reason for cars like that to survive. But you know, how many that relates to, and how long they will last, I don't know. I don't know.
Think back to 2008. What did Toyota do with its fun cars?
Well, it got rid of all of them, didn't it?
It put a gun to their head and pulled the trigger. Just got rid.
Yeah. In the same way that, and you went, you probably won't remember this, but you know, but Honda did it as well earlier in the 90s. They just got rid of everything.
Mm.
And
it's telling now that Toyota is actually producing more of these affordable-ish fun cars than many, many other car makers. Think about the GR range, GR Yaris, GR Supra, I know it's a bit more expensive, GR86. So they clearly recognise that actually it's not good long-term just to produce worthy stuff, because there has to be some degree of desirability around your brand.
But at the same time, yeah, you're right. But two things. Firstly, with the GR86, my understanding is absolutely that thing scraped through. Literally, yeah, they just made the business case for it, and so it got made. It was the absolute opposite of a slam dunk. So you know, that's one thing. And the second thing is, it would be really interesting to go to them now, if you could get a straight answer out of them, and just say, okay, imagine when you made all those decisions to do those cars, the world was like it is now. Would you have done those cars? I don't know if you get the same answer. I don't know if you get the same answer. You know, when the global economy is so much worse, when you're that much closer to those cars being rendered obsolete anyway, I'm not sure that they would. So you know, the cars that we see on the streets today are always a lagging indicator, aren't they? They're always it's like all those supercars that got designed, you know, in the bull market of the late 1980s. You know, the XJ220s and EB110s and McLaren F1s and all those sorts of things. Well, you know, they may have been, you know, conceived in that world, but they were born into a very different one, and they all died on their asses.
Yeah, commercially.
As a result, yeah.
That's a good point. Okay, so let's talk about the here and now then. What are the fun, affordable cars that are out there?
Well, can we just do the Fiesta? I just want to talk about the Fiesta because I just think it... I mean, I know and I understand why, well, the Fiesta in general and the ST in particular have been canned, but it makes me... You know, I've been a bit surprised by just how... I don't know, sad is too emotional a word, but just, you know, frankly, a bit put out I've been by the news that... the Fiesta has gone. You know, as I wrote on our Instagram piece, you know, it's such an enduring nameplate. And I know there were some rubbish ones in the middle. But, you know, from the early XR2 to, you know, the ST of today, and actually all the, so many, certainly since 2000, and when was it? Oh, I can't remember, 2008, 2009, when the generation before this one came out, you know, the sort of the game-changing generation, the one that looked like an Aston Martin. So many people have had so much fun. So many lives have been improved on a daily basis just by knowing that there was a 1 litre Z-Tech Fiesta, you know, parked outside your house, and you're going to get in there, and it was your own fun little world, and that was great. And that's all going to stop now. And it's just, it is sad. I genuinely think it is sad. And you know, the Fiesta ST is one of the most joyous cars I've ever driven, of any kind, at any price. It's just so much fun. And it's so much fun because you know when you drive it, it's got nothing to do with its performance, that it was engineered by people who got it, who understood what a fun car should feel like. And they knew it wasn't about 0-60 times and power outputs and lateral adhesion. They just knew it was about poise and precision. and being able to hoof the thing around a bit without it ever using more space than it should, and the feel of the thing, and you know what drivers really want. And there are so many people, and this is what, you know, this is what worries me so much about the future. There are so many people who have cars like that who won't even know why they love them. They'll just say, they won't be able to say, oh yes, I love it because, you know, I love all the lift-off oversteer or, you know, the gearing of the steer. They won't know. They'll just think, they'll just say, I don't know why I love it, but they just do. It's just so much fun to drive. And you'll go, well, why is it fun to drive? And they'll just go, well, I just really enjoy driving. And that's enough. Doesn't matter. You don't have to, you know, I don't have to know how my television works to enjoy watching it. It's, you know, the fact that it does it is all that you need. And, you know, the fact that's all going to go and be replaced by what? You know, what is Ford's budget offering going to be? What is Ford going to offer to the young driver of the future?
Is it the Puma?
Well, yeah, but when you, what's the smallest amount of, I don't know, what's the smallest amount of money you can pay for a Puma? I don't know, but I bet it begins with a 2.
Mm.
You know, you, yeah, what you can't do is you can't go and, you know, I've just, funnily enough, today, I've just sold the Toyota Aygo that my daughters learnt to drive in. They've both grown up and they've both gone. And when I needed that car, I thought, when I wanted to buy that car, I thought, well, I need a car that will do this job, and I don't want to spend a huge amount of money on it. And so I went and bought a 7-year-old Toyota Aygo. I didn't pay very much. Well, you can't go and buy a 7-year-old Puma for not very much money because A, there aren't any, and B, even if there were, they'd still be expensive. So that's all gone.
Mm. Yeah, it has all gone. It's changing very quickly, very quickly.
Yeah,
it's a totally different environment.
I wonder whether these manufacturers just think, well, it's okay because we accept we will sell fewer cars in the future. That's inevitable, but it's all right because we'll make a lot of money because we'll charge a lot of money for them. And besides, we really haven't got a choice because it's not possible to make a car like a Fiesta anymore that is financially viable. So, but then what does that do to everything? What does that do to people who need affordable cars? What does that do to people who can't afford to drop, you know, 30 grand into a Vauxhall Corsa? Because that's what an electric Corsa costs. That's the least amount of money you'll spend on an electric Corsa. What's going to happen to them? I mean, the cheapest Fiesta at the moment, I looked it up. I was surprised by how much it was. What do you think is the least amount of money you can spend on a Fiesta right now?
Is it 17?
Very good, 18.
Mm.
It might be 17,995 or something, but it's about £18,000.
I know, and it feels like it wasn't that long ago that you'd get one for 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, isn't it? And that's a Fiesta. Well, yeah. If you think that's a lot of money, try and buy, you know, an electric car in that class. It's not 18 grand, it's £30,000. Now, it may be that you can get great deals on PCPs and everything else at the moment, but, you know, how long is that going to last with interest rates going up? You know, as you said to me before we came on air, you know, the reason for that is interest rates have been so low. It's all been pretty cheap money, so they've been able to price these things affordably. Well, ha-ha, not anymore.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. And against that backdrop, fun cars, to get us back on track, are very, very difficult for a car maker to justify. No, but it's all stuff that needs to be said, isn't it? The ST, that is no... I think it's in June, isn't it? Next year or July. June, yeah. I think, that they stop producing the Fiesta. So we have a few more months of Fiesta production, and then that will be the end of the Fiesta ST for good. And I, as we all do, you know, we think back to the fun that we've had in Fiestas. I've been thinking about STs in particular. And one drive will live long in the memory. It was Route Napoleon ST200, which was the sort of run-out special they did of the Mark 7. And just, honestly, howling along that road, which is one of the world's great driving roads, in that car was bliss. I adored every moment of it. And you kind of think, oh, great, well, there'll always be a Fiesta ST, you know, because it's a mainstay. But no, a few months and it'll be gone. And you just wonder, what will fill its place, if anything, ever? You know, am I going to repeat that journey, that entire day spent hammering along the Route Napoleon in a fast, fun little Ford? when it's a battery powered thing?
Well, you might, because maybe. Never is a long time.
Maybe. Yeah.
But it's not any time soon.
It's not going to happen soon, is it? No.
Well, batteries are two things small and affordable cars can't be, which is big and expensive. You know, there's nothing which makes, you know, battery power more. What am I trying to say? Small affordable cars and EVs are just not suited to each other, because you either make them small and put tiny batteries in them, which says nobody wants them because they've got no range. Or you put big batteries in them, which days they're almost certainly no longer small, and they're certainly not no longer affordable, which days people can't afford them. So, you know, I think we're looking for a technological breakthrough, the likes of which we haven't seen yet in EV technology, before these cars are going to come back on stream. You know, something like solid state, had it ever happened, if it ever happens, where you have something which is much more compact, much more energy dense, easier, quicker to recharge, and everything else that we know is so good about the theory of solid state, that could do it. But, you know, if Dyson can't do it, with all the money that he threw at that project before he canned it, then, you know, I'd say that it ain't happening anytime soon. So,
even on solid state, I was speaking to a Ferrari engineer who said that, and this was when we'd just driven the SF90, which is a hybrid, and he said that solid state might increase capacity or reduce the size and weight of a battery by 10%. And the advantages come elsewhere, it's safer. But, you know, that doesn't seem like a great step change. Others might say it's more. I was surprised when he said 10%. And actually, I've spoken to so many people about this, and there will be continual improvements with lithium ion. You know, good 5, 6, 7, 8% a year. They'll keep.
There already have been. Yeah,
yeah.
And it will keep happening. Far do they have to go?
Yeah, but the major point is that development around lithium ion is not going to be around power density or weight. It's going to be around coming away from rare earth metals, which is actually a better ambition, a better goal. But, you know, that actually, for the driver on the road, there's no real world benefit there. It has to happen, and it will happen. It's good that that's where the development will come. But it's not as though suddenly, in 5 years, your battery electric car with a lithium-ion battery is going to have double the range.
No, it's not.
Anyway.
Can we talk about GR86? Can we just really annoy people and talk about the GR86 for a minute? The GR86 that no one can buy.
Oh, so frustrating, isn't it? Do you know, when I got rid of my car, I reckon I would have had a GR86 if I could get one. But you can't. There's so few. It's only on sale for 2 years. Only in production for 2 years. And the allocation in the UK is tiny. And they're gone.
Imagine what the residuals on that. I mean, if you've got one... I reckon you've got a free car, haven't you? You've got a better than free car. I reckon the market will pay you to have that car pretty much for as long as you want to have it.
And people are going to be selling allocations for 911 GT3s. Bloody hell, these weird market distortions are odd, aren't they? They're so odd. Yeah.
So the GR86, I've been lucky enough to... I've driven them on road and on track. And there is just something wonderful about it, because by not trying to be clever, it is so incredibly clever. Because it just goes, we don't need all of that crap. We don't need all those assistance systems. We don't need that, you know, we don't need a massive contact patch. We don't need, you know, all those acronyms that come after a car's name with all the gizmos and stuff. What we need is a car which puts its engine at one end and you drive it at the other. Okay, we're going to make that engine breathe at atmospheric pressure, because that's what the best engines do. And we're going to allow you to select which gear you're in with a thing called a clutch and a gear lever. And that's it. And, you know, and if you look at that, I mean, that's the formula that goes back to, you know, the dawn of the car. You know, the very first sports cars were all like that. And the sports cars that, you know, I think we probably love the most, whether you're talking, you know, affordable MX-5s or, you know, unaffordable Ferrari Daytonas, they're all the same. They all have that layout. And with very, very good reason. And you get in the GR86 in much the same way as the GT86. And there is something so pure and so natural and so clearly right just about the configuration. And then on top of that, you know, they have engineered it pretty well. Now, actually, I don't think it is quite as nice to live with as a GT86 because they firmed it up and they have made it a bit more sensible. I mean, it will still slide and slide and slide if you want to do, but you have to. It's not kind of like that almost ridiculously natural state that it was for the GT86.
It's the tyres, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the tyres. Well, I mean, GT86 came on Prius tyres, didn't it? Whereas I think a GR86 comes on PS4s or maybe PS4Ss, Michelins. So, yeah, but it's also firmer still. It doesn't ride as well as a GT86. But, you know, I had it on track alongside a lot of very senior stuff. Very, very senior. And you wouldn't believe how well it did in that company. Well, you probably would. Because it's not about how fast you're going. And I've said this so many times before, but I'm going to say it again. You know, the faster you have to go to get a car to do what it does is directly related to the number of opportunities you get to do it. And the faster it is, the fewer the opportunities. And it is as simple as that. And I just love those sorts of cars. I love the fact that they're light and they're balanced and they have feel and they don't take up too much. I mean, everything I want about the car, about a car, is encapsulated in that kind of car. And I can remember in, I don't know, 1990 or 1989 or whatever, when I first drove an MX-5, just thinking exactly that. Just the very, very first MX-5 into the UK. And I got in it and I did the autocar road test on it. And just thinking, actually, this is what I want a fun car to be. And it doesn't have to be, cost a bazillion pounds and everything else. It's just fun. And you can't be driving that car and be cheesed off at the same time because it's just so infectiously communicative and fun. And yeah, going to miss him.
Well, there's some good news on that, with regard to the MX-5, I mean. With your new one in a couple of years, maybe 2024, around there, and it will be true to the MX-5 formula, it seems. It's going to be considered completely separate to Mazda's other the mainstream models that Mazda produces, which are heading in the EV direction, obviously. And it's not going to share its architecture, its platform with any other Mazda. So it's going to be a bespoke, rear-drive, small, light, petrol-powered roadster. And it's just encouraging to know that actually, while we sit here, and sometimes it does feel like doom and gloom, there is a new MX-5 coming. And it should, as long as they get it right, it should be fun to drive and affordable like the current car. So that's something to look forward to, at least. Whether or not it'll be naturally aspirated, I don't know. But
can we just speculate as to, why they're doing it? There is a car manufacturer, so they wouldn't do it. They were not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. They're not just sitting there thinking, oh, poor old Dan and Andrew, they're a bit down on the mouth today. Let's do them in MX-5. They're doing it because they can make money out of it, or they think they can make money out of it.
Yeah.
And obviously, at the time that car got signed off, as I said earlier, the world was a different place. But I think the MX-5 is a special case because it has that market pretty much to itself. And I know that cars have come along, cars like, the last Toyota MR2 is a particular case in point. You know, so it has attracted the odd direct rival, but very, very few. So
not
for over
30 one.
Years. Yeah. So for over 30, I mean, and that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes a new car comes along and it's so good that everybody feels the need to jump on the bandwagon. But just occasionally, something comes along which is so completely off the scale, everybody just goes, we're not going anywhere near it.
Yeah.
And the MX-5 is that car, isn't it? It has always been a special case. And yeah, so it's fantastic that they're making another one, and that makes me happy, and I look forward to driving it. Whether there'll be one after that, if there is one after that, it'll have to be an EV, won't it?
Yeah, it will be. So there's probably one more petrol-powered MX-5. But the volumes must be good on the MX-5 as well. It must sell really well around the world,
which
makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's another, reported this week, another hopefully affordable-ish sports car coming, a Caterham. This one is electric, but it's going to be a sort of bigger, more modern looking thing than a 7. Reportedly, it's coming in 2026, maybe with a roof. Bigger, more aerodynamic than a 7. There'll be some modern conveniences inside. There'll be some safety tech, ABS, power steering. So not a fully pared back pure driver's car, quite like a 7. Steel space frame chassis, though, still light. Maybe 1,000 cars a year built in a new factory. Rear wheel drive, fully electric. Actually, I say bring it on. I'm really intrigued to learn more about this car and have a go in it. But it has to be light and it has to be simple and it has to be fun to drive. Of course, you're not going to have a manual gearbox.
You're not going to have a gearbox? Well, you'll have a single speed gearbox.
Yeah. And it'll be very quiet. And it just how light can they get one of these things? You know, it's even Caterham. How light can they get a car?
Well, it has to be under a ton, doesn't it?
It's got to be. But how small is, how limiting is the battery range if it's that light?
Well, okay. Let me give the case for and against. The case against is a thing called the Caterham 21. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they've been down this road before. They've tried to do a more user-friendly Caterham before.
And the Alpine collab that never happened.
And the Alpine collaboration that never happened. And in both cases, it went very badly wrong. Can't remember how many 21s were made, but it's more than 10 and it's fewer than 50. I think it's in the 20s. The 21 was certainly a very unlucky car because it came along at exactly the same time as the Lotus Elise and did effectively the same job. So maybe there was a reason for that. But it is a leap, isn't it? I mean, it's a big, big leap to go from, the most tactile driving experience pretty much on the road today to something which won't make any noise and doesn't have a gearbox and is going to be heavier. And who's the target customer? Is it a traditional Caterham buyer? Are they going for something? I mean, it would suggest to me, from the volumes you're talking about, that they're after somebody else entirely, because Caterham make between 500 and 600 cars at the moment, and given that they're going to keep the 7 in production, and they're going to build... So this electric, whatever it is going to be their bestseller. It's going to be their mainstay car. And I think that is... I think it's incredibly brave. I think it's incredibly ambitious. I wish them all the very best of luck with it, but it concerns me. On the other hand, the point four, which goes back to what you were saying about the range, is I think if there's one car, there's one electric car where range is just not that important, it is something like a Caterham. You know, if you're going to make an electric Cayman, it has to have range because it has to be usable. Because people will use it as their everyday car. People aren't going to use electric Caterham as an everyday car. Well, a few nutters might, but so I think because it will be a recreation, the pressure to do a car that will do 250 miles on a charge isn't there. And I think if it did, what do you think, Dan? 150 genuine miles on a charge?
Well, let's imagine that you're driving it the way a Caterham should be driven, and that makes a huge difference.
Sure.
Perhaps even 100 would be adequate. You know, think about how you use your 7, and it's a slightly different kind of car. Actually, maybe it's a very different kind of car. But I don't suspect you do long journeys in yours, do you?
No, and if I do, they're artificial. It's because, you know, I got a photo shoot somewhere which it needs to be part of. I did. Okay, so I took it over to... I live in the Welsh borders, and I took it over to Sussex for a weekend driving various cars with my mates and back, and that was fine. And if it had been electric, it would have been difficult. But that's one journey in very, you know. So what it would do, which is what I usually do with it, one of the favourite things I do of a weekend, particularly in the summer when I can get up early, is get in the 7 at like 5 in the morning, drive off into the Beacons, find a mountain, walk up it, come back down and drive home again and be home in time for breakfast. I absolutely love that. And certainly an electric one would do that jelly. If I could get a even 120 miles out of it, certainly 150. So for that kind of, which I think is a more typical use scenario, then yeah, it would work for that.
And, you know, if we had a very, very good charge network and you knew more or less wherever you were going, you could find somewhere near enough to plug in and for 15 minutes later you've got a full battery. That's a totally different game, isn't it?
It is, and also because it will have a small battery, it won't take long to charge.
True.
And also the other thing is that we will, you know, by the time this thing comes along, in whatever it is, 4 years' time, A, the infrastructure will be that much better. B, you know, lots of similar cars, or lots of the cars that, you know, that we would compare it to today won't be around anymore. And we will just be, you know, that much more used to EVs and their limitations. And, you know, it just won't be the problem then that we perceive it is now. But, I mean, what interests me is how Caterham, this, you know, quirky little, very British brand, which makes these stripped out impractical road racing cars, is going to somehow convince 1,000 overwhelmingly other people, unless they're talking about additions, so people have sevens and one of these things, which they may well, I guess, that a Caterham is a thing to have rather than, you know, anything else from a more familiar brand that may be around at the time for a similar price.
And there was another one apparently on its way in a similar sort of market, the new MG electric sports car, previewed last year by the Cyberster, which was a concept. It does, although why does it need 500-600 horsepower? Why does it need to do 0-60 in 3 seconds?
You know, well, maybe like, it won't.
Well, but why does the concept even need to do that? I don't understand that.
Well, because they need headlights. But I mean, I take your point. How much happy would you be if it just had 300 horsepower and was that much lighter as a result? It would just be better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Someone has to do it. And, you know, it's not been confirmed that they are going to build... Effectively, it'll be an electric rival to the Mazda MX-5. But I really hope they do. It'll be interesting.
I really think that they will. That platform that they've built for the MG4, which is a cracking car, and actually we were talking about Corsairs, you know, not replacing Fiestas and that sort of thing. If there ever were an electric car, an affordable electric car, the closest that there is to replacing a petrol car like a Fiesta is that MG4, actually, which I think costs from about £25,000. So, yeah, we mustn't not mention that. But sorry, the point is that that platform that it's on is so flexible.
Yeah.
You know, it can make everything from, it can make an MG4, it can make a car, a hatchback even smaller than MG4, it can make that sports car, and it can make something with a wheelbase of an S-Class Mercedes. And they didn't develop that platform from scratch, not to do a lot of different things with it, because those guys are on the move. And we know they are. We know that they are absolutely, you know, particularly now that the Koreans have become sufficiently well established that they don't no longer feel the need to compete on the sort of stack 'em high, sell 'em cheap basis. MG is going to move into that territory while at the same time exploiting, you know, the brand equity that they have in that octagon. And I think what better than an electric two-seat sports car? Because they could credibly sell that as an MG, because that's what MGs are to most people. Now, if somebody says to me, MG, and what comes into my head, it'll be an MGB. It'll be a two-seat affordable sports car. So I'm sure they will do it. And I'm fascinated to see, you know, if it is anything like as good at its job as the MG4 as it is, you know, watch out, world. Because, you know, these guys are good. They know what they're doing.
And there'll be others coming in from China as well. Andrew English wrote a piece for us on the TI app and website recently, looking at the Chinese brands that are going to start establishing themselves in Europe. And there are lots of them. And that's right. They are going to be operating on the value basis, aren't they? Stack 'em high, sell it cheap. The same game that the Koreans started playing 20 years ago or something.
But don't play anymore because they don't need to.
I've got a Kia EV6 GT outside at the moment. I haven't driven it, so I'm not going to talk about it much, but it's got almost 600 horsepower and it costs £62,500.
A bargain compared to that Genesis we were in the other day. We're in a Genesis going off to do some job together. And a Genesis is the sort of posh Korean brand. It is to Hyundai what Lexus is to Toyota, isn't it? Or Acura to Honda.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's an Ioniq 5 underneath, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, okay, this was the top of the range model and it had lots of goodies on it. But here was a Korean SUV, which that car had a list price of...
65 basic. This one was specced up to 75.
£75,000.
It's just insane, isn't it? Actually, I'm going to write a review about that car soon because I have some thoughts. I'm going to drive this Kia first and see how they compare, but I will write about it. It is just staggering, the price. Well, this is another problem with these affordable electric sports cars that we hope are on the way. How affordable are they going to be?
Look
at all the other EVs out there. They're scarcely affordable, are they? And these are sort of mass-produced ones that platforms share with petrol cars. Maybe they're not going to be affordable. Maybe they are 50 grand plus cars, all the electric Caterham, the electric MG.
Do you think this is going to be our most miserable podcast to date?
It's possible, isn't it? We'll have to pick a cheerier subject next week.
Yes. Why I love going sideways.
Yeah. And we can talk about the GR86 again. One last point of order on this topic. What does it mean for affordable petrol-powered sports cars? Because there will be so many people who, in their affordable fun car, they want a manual gearbox, they want a buzzy little engine. And that's fair enough, totally fair enough. But if you can't buy them new anymore, what does it mean for, you said just before we came on, what if you picked up a three-year-old low-mileage Fiesta ST now?
Yes, yes.
What happens to the value of that car over the next 3 years?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I could sit here and tell you what I really think, which is that, you know, you could have a free car for 3 years. Mm. You could have it, you could hoon about in it, and then somebody thinks, oh, that's a good idea, and goes and does that, and then something completely different happens a person as stupid as me hasn't even thought of gets in the way, and I've made someone spend a load of money which they shouldn't have spent. So I mean, I don't want to be too definitive about that, but
yeah.
I think that someone who was smart and was a canny shopper and knew what he or she was on about and who saw this thing coming, which it is coming, this absolute dearth of affordable cars of any kind, frankly, let alone affordable fun cars, and just thought, okay, so I'm going to cherry pick a few or one or two. Not because I want to make money out of them, but because, you know, I don't want to lose money on them, which is an entirely, you know, noble pursuit. I think you could get something which is fantastic, and I think it would look after you very well. I mean, ultimately, I guess if you kept it for years and years and years until, you know, and it's like we're banned, then that's a different conversation. But certainly for the next few years, I think, you know, something like a really nice, unmessed about, nicely specced, low mileage 3-year-old Fiesta ST. Yeah.
Mm.
But then people like me saying that isn't going to do their second hand values any, you know.
But there's an argument to say, isn't there, that there are cars across the board that fit similar criteria, desirable,
but
will always be fun to drive, that are going to look after you. So maybe now is the time. We're not talking
with all that with all that spare money we all have at the moment.
That's right. Yeah, but if you have something, maybe now is the time to put that money into a fun car that you don't pile a load of miles onto, because it is going to look after you. When they're not being built anymore, the demand moves to the stuff that exists already.
And it all works until interest rates hit 10%, and, you know, nothing's affordable at that stage. So
I was trying to end it on a positive, happy note.
Sorry, I've got my bar humbug hat on this morning.
Oh well. Okay. Well, there we go. Yes. That's affordable, fun cars. Right, we've got a very challenging listener question coming up.
Oh God, I'm not in a mood to be challenged.
I'm sorry, but you're going to be. I don't have an answer to it. It's a very tough question.
Is it what's the greatest car you've ever driven?
No, it's not that. No, we'll do that one later on. But before we do it, please go and rate and review this podcast. Lots of you have been doing it, and it really helps us find a bigger audience, new listeners. And actually, we've been doing quite well, haven't we? We look at those charts, those podcast charts, and our little podcast seems to float around the top of it somehow, in the automotive chart and the leisure chart, the broader leisure chart.
Yes. We beat BBC Gardener's World. Or was it Gardener's Question Time? The big gardening podcast. We beat that.
Yeah.
Which I'm quite pleased that we beat Brain of Britain as well. Which doesn't really define us, does it?
Leisure is mostly cars, gardening, knitting, and then a couple of other bits and pieces, isn't it?
Oh, dogs. There are quite a few dog podcasts on the... but anyway. So, no, I mean, the last episode was... Oh, well, both the podcast generally and that episode got to number 2 in the UK leisure charts, which I just find bizarre, frankly. I know I'm not allowed to say that, but it gives us so much pleasure that you guys find, us wittering on incessantly about all this sort of stuff. It just means, actually, more than anything else, that, we're all sort of like-minded people together. And it's not just Dan and me just sitting there. And nobody else feels the same way. Clearly, quite a lot of you do. So, thank you.
And actually, we've been talking about how we do more with the podcast, haven't we? How we make it more varied, more interesting. And there's so much that we can do. We've got big plans. Maybe we'll tell you about them soon. But there's plenty, plenty more to come. So do also go and check out the Intercooler, the app, the website, the-intercooler.com. You can start your 1 month free trial on us. If you don't like it, you can just cancel. We don't think you will, though, because it's good, in our opinion. Well, that's right. The listener question then comes from, and I'm going to get your name wrong. It's probably Robbie, but it's spelled R-O-B-E-Y. Robbie? Robbie?
Robbie? Robbie, yeah. Maybe.
You'll know who you are. But he wants to know, it's a tough one, if you could only have one car and only ever drive that one car, what would it be? And it has to fit into your life. So if you've got kids, it has to be able to take them around. If you need
Hang on. My kids are grown up and gone.
Well, that's fine. It doesn't matter. So you have to be able to use this as your one car. And you don't borrow other cars. You don't have something fun in the shed. It's one car. And he says that his is the... Oh, okay. So his is the current Audi S4. And he has one. So... Well done to you. But I mean, I've been thinking about this and I just don't have an answer, which isn't good enough. So I'll come up with something.
I've got an answer if I don't have to put my children in it.
No, it is, if you have to put your children in it ever at all or anyone else, it has to be able to do that.
Do I have to pay for the fuel?
Okay, I'll give you that. You don't have to pay for the car itself or the fuel.
E63 wagon.
Yeah. I think I'm probably M5 CS. So similar sort of train of thought there, isn't it?
That's a good call. M5 CS. Because I was thinking M5. Why didn't I think of the CS? I was thinking M5 and I was thinking, well, it would have to be an E60. I was like, well, no, yeah, that's a bit... but no, you're right. M5 CS, very good call. If it wasn't for the children, so it has to do everything other than that. So it also has to be a sort of almost sort of classic car. Rear drive manual 997 GTS coupe.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I get that one.
That's the one. A late 997 GTS coupe manual rear drive. Yes,
yeah,
please.
Fantastic. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Well, it's a totally different thing if I'm making you pay for the car and the fuel, isn't it? I'd need to give that one more time. But.
Well, okay. If you're making me pay for the car and the fuel, I think you've, honestly, I'm not joking. I hate to blow smoke, though, I do. I think you've got it.
Do you know what? I was going to say mine as well, but I didn't dare to. Now that you have... Golf GTI Performance.
A 7.5 Golf...
Manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Five-door.
With the diff and... Yeah, absolutely. Mm. With the performance. Is it the performance packet's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've got it.
I hope that car looks after me over the next few years. Okay. Well, thank you for your question, Robbie. Sorry. please, it's a fun way to end the podcast, isn't it? I think people enjoy the listener question at the end of the podcast. People tell us that they do. So get yours across. And if it's a good one, we'll use it next week.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.